Blog Talk Radio.
Effects. You've rediscovered us. Welcome back. Place where we can, as thoughtful people, talk about things meaningful and pertinent to masonry. A place where perhaps, and hopefully, those topics that are, you know, difficult to broach in lodge or with your companions. Have a chance to be discussed thoughtfully, and at a place where we can sit and enjoy an international thread for a few minutes over the course of a week. It's an absolute pleasure to have you here, and I want to again share my gratitude to listeners from Brazil and Austria and the Philippines and Uganda and China, although very briefly, Russia, yes, of course, France, a continued presence here in the UK. Thank you very much, and of course, Canada and then some listeners from the United States. Really. I'm thinking that we've been speaking exactly for this type of audience for a long, long time, looking for an audience that that had a different sense of boundaries than what the ancient discoverers or creators or of masonry worked on. We're an audacious group, always have been. This is about, for hundreds and hundreds of years, masonry has filled a need. It's not something that you can inject into a culture, certainly not. It's something that's a reflection at a microscopic level. It's not under the radar. It's because it's an intrinsic need. It's something that happens within the intellect. It's gone on to, it's evolved into something similar but different than what it was originally. I mean, we may still be, you know, generically similar and refer to us as ourselves as a fraternal order. But the comparators have changed considerably as the years have passed, or the decades have passed. It's maintained. It's curious, though, that this need has always been consistent. This need for a thoughtful, a contemplative moment of understanding, whether it's looking up at the stars and trying to relate to our position in the great scheme of things, or it's those brief moments of lucidity when we begin to ask questions about purpose and function, and perhaps that's over a conquest or the success story, or more often than not, it's one of those universals that affects us all, like saying goodbye to a loved one or a friend after they die. I know I want everyone I know to die after me, because the that feeling of passage is difficult, and it always seems like it's the good ones that are missed the most. But wherever they are and whatever they're doing, we hope, and I think Masons in large measure subscribe to the idea that a life unexamined is hardly worth living. So that could be as valid then as it is today, but we've transcended. Masonry is not easy on us. Now, come on. We've gone from an oral organization to a written organization. It's not that the vehicle has remained the same. We can talk about how much of our information is passed on orally, but think about ourselves. We are the people that were there in the beginnings of these times, whether it was in 1400 when that first sort of version of what we now know as a lodge were forming. It wasn't necessarily around a galvanizing moment. It was people talking, people communicating about and feeling safe to raise questions and be a little bit different. And as you know, Masonry draws on this acknowledgement that we have secrets. So that challenges fundamentalists, it challenges honest people. And my goodness, if you know how many, you know, that old bromide, if you have nothing to hide, why not just explain yourself to, you know, the police state kind of a mentality. If you have nothing to hide, then tell us all that we want to know. Our culture, that freedom of thought is the freedom to be reserved, to be cautious, to reflect, not to be, to feel any pressure on our neck to respond in every way when it's demanded of us. Not a bit. The tasks at hand, certainly one that we've endorsed over the years, is about silence, being able to keep control of your emotion, keep control of your wits instead of blathering because something unpleasant happens. Well, you run around with your little jazz hands, upset over what? Because you've always done it, and it's your nature. And of course, the epitome of arrogance is anything coming out of us is truth, and anybody else is wrong. The epitome of egocentrism. Well, you've traded that in for the sense of universality, of bouncing ideas off of an objective reality, of testing them with a logic. And then we have some very clever ideas woven into this. If we were ever to ask what the purpose of all of this is, it's in front of us. The purpose is to achieve a sense of happiness. And so many years ago, like a lot of things, you know, our current science is like a rediscovery. It's not like going back. Don't make that mistake. There is no going back. We don't turn the clock back. We play with that notion. Everything moves forward day by day, by moment, by second. We have an ability to understand based on the most consistent information that we have at the time. Oh, and for any hardliners out there who feel that the world is just bare facts, well, then the question is always to examine how very intelligent people have addressed questions when the information has been clouded or opaque or unclear. Apart from rolling a dice or just flat out guessing, we know, you know, toss a coin, 50% of the time we'll be right. if we're also able to realize that there are things that we don't know. There are questions we can ask that won't have a satisfying or defined answer just because we ask the question. Masonry presents us with that question. What is and we have to address that as a member, each as we mature. So we have a good program today, and to all of you who are tuning in, I appreciate that. We have a very good program today. The commentary, I think, is kind of devilish. Why aren't you a Mason? And you can split that a bit. Hmm? Think about it. There's a couple of ways you can ask yourself that question. When I hear people, good Masons, lament the lack of effort or something about their expectations. You know, they have an expectation at this level. The performance is at that level. Realistically, that's always the case. Our expectations are always just exceeding our grasp. Now, we have to figure out whether we're going to define the outcome as failure or as part of that process of matching expectations with performance. And those truly are people that are a bit discordant. That's the performance of people that are out of step with themselves and may never know if you choose to put your head in the sand. It's very, very easy to avoid. It's very easy to avoid until it becomes meaningful, until you begin to find that you've challenged yourself. Good mentors help to bring that out. But more important is scholarship. The mischief of Masonry is the movement from an oral tradition, an oral approach to understanding, to a written. So as I've been reading the Odyssey, I'm embarrassed that I never got through it. My high school, in the day, they didn't feel that it was a necessary requisite for a lot of students to read that type of classic material. So, you know, fault to everybody that went through that process. But reading the introduction, you realize in the translation that I'm following, that Virgil was the musician, the Greek musician, taught left us with songs. And if anything, when you hear a song, if it's the song of a troubadour, you're hearing stories, you're hearing connections, events, and it means that it's treating everybody as a listener, dignifying that whole process. And then Homer comes along and writes. Now, there may be conjecture about this, poem 2,700 years old, but it's also, there's a bit of conjecture about whether that's in fact the age of it or not. Let's say maybe 9th century BC, maybe, 5th century BC, throw that in. But there's a lot that's not known. There's a lot that's not known about that part of history. It's just blank. So we have to suppose. Homer comes along and is credited, like James Anderson is credited with the Constitution. He's credited with writing this. Well, okay, we weren't there, and somebody's got to, you know, they want to put some notion of where this came, you know, whose ideas were at play. So you put down a name. Was he the only one? No. There was a very interesting process when there was an expectation that all of the old, documents be forwarded to London to be collated. And in fact, we hear stories of lodges burning their secrets rather than passing them on. Oh, no, don't be thinking for a moment that everything about us is in a uniform. This was not a military encampment. This was a remarkable challenge of people blending together. Nobody forces us to do things. As much as we may be around some bombastic headliner telling us and ordering, you know, somebody that's uncomfortable with power or has a sense of power because of their job role and thinks that they can just transpose that into the lodge. Lodges are always different. Eh? The way we function, the way we exercise authority, and the way we respond to it. I like to think that we're idealistic creatures, we Masons, and we do things because we get it. Because one of the few places I've ever seen that where there's so much anticipation is in a lodge that's confident enough for the brethren to come together, where they can anticipate, and they're comfortable with that. Common purpose. So over the years, this has not faded at all. But we've folded into our operations the needs of people that have generally occurred because of galvanizing events. Wars will do that. Well, in the natural course, once the natural course of life is not battle, I'm sorry. I'm going to read a little poetry to you. Poetry being the expression of the soul of the earth. You know, we'll read that and we'll explain a little bit why battle is not the heart of our existence. It's the heart of our existence is defined camaraderie, to be happy, to take care of our loved ones, to be able to take care of our brethren. But we'll get back to that. Good show today. Here, we're going to tune in with a little bit of a focus, some music to help us to focus, some math in another form. This is Yo-Yo Ma and Chris Botti. I think you'll recognize this material. This is from 2009. Check it out. Thank you. Absolutely breathtaking. Absolutely breathtaking. Yo-Yo Ma on the cello and Chris Botti on trumpet. Just not to be believed, eh? The commentary today. I want to fold this in. It fits nicely with some of the work we've been doing on symbolism. It's out there. The history, this is not a closed or secret history. It's secrecy. It's a history of events that happened in particular places on the face of the earth in particular times. We have collected it, and we're examining it more closely. So if anybody's waiting for the aha moment, I knew, well, go to your local library, pick up your reading list and develop your interest, or sit down with us and share an interest and a curiosity. And you can start to begin asking yourself, why? Why would we be curious about some of these esoteric events and topics? We tend not to. It's like you, if everybody's done something embarrassing, but we don't walk around parading it or bragging about it, or we don't point it out. We don't want to pull the scab off the wound, so to speak. And it's the same. If something has been credited to Amy's, and it's considered to have had an effect on all of us. Think of it. It's like you living in a community of hundreds of thousands of people, and one person stubs their toe, and everybody in that community from that point on is known as toe stubbers. Of course, life goes on. It's not to disassociate from those events, but we've been pretty good and pretty consistent at maintaining a high expectation of one another. This isn't about doing things because somebody else expects you to do it. This is about doing things because you know it's the right thing to do. So the callous and the cynics amongst us that say everybody's a criminal and that's a mind that is able to criminalize certain behavior. You weren't born with that mindset. Where did you learn it? Come on, here, sit down and relax. We're going to help you with a bit of that. Why aren't you a Mason? And help me with this. Give me an answer. MasonicEffects@gmail.com. The connection between self-development and masonry is obscure. I can say it. You know, that's what it's about, but it's obscure. Yet for over 700 years, people have gathered in various configurations to debate. Perhaps Hegel was not as prescient as we want to believe. Perhaps defining ideas through debate, as he is known for citing, came to him through a leaked comment about early lodge meetings. To this day, the layered insights of thousands of Masons make it difficult to lay claim to this grail quest of existence. Doing slightly better today than I did tomorrow than I did today. It is a modest claim, but contains the same confident gradualism most achievers well understand. Most things worth pursuing require commitment. Commitment requires patience. Patience requires self-awareness. Wealth and fame do not instill happiness. Happiness is an internal process. So what we do externally does not produce the fountain of youth. One must actively seek it every day, every hour, every minute. Masonry has done. Let us not pretend modern science is the start of every idea. go through it, new facts raise new questions. The ancient Greeks scuttled that idea in 3rd century BC, being a cultural breeding ground of ideas that gave out notice of heliocentrism and molecules and many other observations well before the latter-day discoverers found them more than 10 centuries later. Doing things selflessly produces a deep sense of satisfaction. Recognition for assistance and aid is unnecessary to achieve nirvana. And that lesson has been an open lesson of Freemasonry, open as if any secret can be hidden if one is a student of behavior. What a person does reveals far more about them than anything they may say. Aude vide tace. Sivi viare in pace. Hear, see, be silent. If you would live in peace. What I enjoy most about Masonry, and something I think that's often misunderstood about the craft, is that it isn't, as some would make you believe, institutional, but fluid. Little Pat Metheny. Thank you. fit. A song appreciated by Masons, I think. A Sound of Silence. Those tunes from my boyhood in the 60s that just resonated. Strange times. Strange times. He brings to mind the poem that I've selected today. This is, I'm becoming a bit slavish, I know, about Alexander Pushkin. But when I'm through, I'm just trying to find something that I think you deserve and trying to eclipse one poet with one another that sort of picks up where the work in the stream. So, yeah, we've covered a little bit of Robert Louis Stevenson and Rudyard Kipling, and I think maybe William Blake. Tended to stay away from William Shakespeare just because so much has been written about, but I probably shouldn't. And Christopher Marlowe, there's big gaps in the program over the years. This is a poem called "The Dream," and I think you'll like it. This is, and it starts, "Not long ago, in a charming dream, I saw myself a king with crowns treasure. I was in love with you, it seemed, and heart was beating with a pleasure. I sang my passion songs by your enchanting knees. Why, dreams, you didn't prolong my happiness forever. But gods deprived me not of whole their favor. I only lost the kingdom of my dreams." Lovely, lovely mind. Lovely. Just think of the idea that he's talking to us about. It helps us to express something, and especially if we aren't prone to wearing that intimacy on our sleeve. It takes us a while to connect with it. "Not long ago, in a charming dream, I saw myself." Maybe Jung was thinking about, Carl Jung was thinking about him when he talked about, you know, that guiding dream, how to guide your dreams. Perhaps Pushkin was one of the fortunates that was intuitive and understood how he was able to influence his dreams without the instruction. I leave you with that. I hope that it fits. I want to pick up here on something that we've been working on for the past couple of shows on symbolism, the things that speak in layers to us, the things that are touchstones of history, of ideas, of the progress of humanity, that have mean different things at different times and yet speak to the eye of the beholder, say something silently to us. It's the appeal when you think about the metaphor here. We endorse this notion of an oral history, and that requires us to learn silence and patience and to control our emotion so that we can hear things that don't necessarily agree with our masterful thoughts or our dreams and still reason through it. What does it teach us about ourselves? I had the experience of a member of a lodge that was quite unpleasant. Every time he ever met me, one of those things where I had, you get to know me, you can hate me, but this is one of those that was just, there before. So, but what that taught me was something deeper about myself, resolution and focus, to be able to enjoy a moment and block out that kind of what I felt was pressure. And I would never have learned that lesson, I realize, would never have learned that lesson if not for the meanness. How do you handle the meanness? Eh? Well, it has to occur to you first. And then you have to think about how you're going to, what does it teach you? Well, masonry, the fault line of masonry is that it lets us know that there are lessons all around us, and some are obvious and some aren't. Well, if we embrace that kind of idea, it means we stop, and before we run off at the mouth, we look in the mirror, and we may sip our tea a little slower. We may swallow that glass of scotch and then take a moment to reflect. Let me pull you from that point to symbols. And we're going to attempt to walk that line between how and why. How we developed a product of an opportunity, let me put it that way, opportunity that came to, that occurred in certain periods, in certain places on the face of the earth at different times for different reasons. So there is, it's like, who was the first person to be happy? You know, it's pretty meaningless to put it that way. If I ask you, tell me about the happiest moment of your life. Tell me about the most inspiring moment of your life. This has nothing to do with first. Life isn't a competition. Investment bankers may want to convince you otherwise, or stockbrokers may want to convince you, life is not a competition. And eventually, you can have great fun feeling that you're defeating somebody else. But in fact, it's a competition about where's it getting you? You know, you'd be right and wrong at the same moment. You want to be an athlete? Be an athlete. These are messages that have come because have been passed on to us because they have resonated, because they have relevance. And it's up to you and I to discover what that relevance is. So here's a little bit about the why and the how. This has to do with the last 20 or 30 years of the 18th century. Right, so think 1770. So we have a constitution in our pocket. So that notion of when we began, you know, that Big Bang moment. Well, we realized didn't happen. Did it happen when we had a constitution written? Well, yeah, in a way, I guess. And does it matter today? Not so much. Did it happen when the Constitution was rewritten and refined to be more inclusive? Well, okay. But does the fact that it was rewritten and improved matter? Well, it does if we're thinking in a scientific frame of reference. We discover new things and we refine, just like we do today. We're still creatures of imagination and communication. We're driven by this imagination and curiosity, and we are fueled by different forms, unique and improved forms of communication. Whatever we feel in the moment is improvement. So I don't think that it has anything to do with age to turn our nose up at what's going on around us. I think that's a bit silly. That's a lack of imagination. Nothing to do with age. It's like saying everybody old is smart and everybody young isn't. That's no better than a woman is intellectually inferior to a man, or the whole eugenics argument. That's insulting. It's just insulting. Or city people, the urbane, are more polished and knowledgeable and aware than people from the country. Yeah, really keep telling yourself that. This is the last 20 or 30 years of the 18th century were noted for the rise of interest in mythology, the occult, and kindred spirits, kindred subjects, and for some extremes in the study of alchemy and the propagation of theories in this whole field. From the point of view of influence on masonry, the most important of these was undoubtedly Swedenborgianism. It's a form of Christian religion developed from the teachings of Emanuel Swedenborg. He was born in 1688 and he passed away in 1772. So just think about the period. The writing of the man himself in the Swedenborg Rite of 1870, Samuel Beswick says, "He was obedient in heart and soul to the call and preferred those spiritual associations which he claims were open to him in the year of his call," that's 1745. "In that year, he claims to have had a divine call to become the herald of a new dispensation of goodness and truth to mankind." Oh, bless him, man. "And to have had his spiritual sight opened so as to be able to see and openly converse with the spirits of departed persons. And to have had his mind enlightened so as to see rationally all the great facts and laws of the unseen world, and that inner and divine sense within the literal rendering of the scriptures, which essentially constitutes divine revelation." It was not the rise of this sect itself that affected Masonry. The Masonry of the day was religiously based, and those who embraced the teachings of Swedenborg attempted to influence the religious aspect of their lodges so as to reflect the beliefs of the sect. A branch of the sect was established in London in 1788. Another way in which Masonry was affected was by a multiplication of rites based on Swedenborgian ideas, particularly on the continent, here, and the involvement of such people as Cagliostro, Mesmer, St. Martin, and many others, some of whom brought continental masonry into disrepute. The whole of the Swedenborgian teaching is based on symbolism, as with this note, again by Samuel Beswick, indicates. "It proposes to teach the symbolism of nature as a science by presenting the most suitable symbols to the eye and senses in the most attractive forms and combinations. There is a strict correspondence between the varied forms and phenomena of nature in the material world and the varied forms, powers, forces, and phenomena of mind, which correspondence cannot be seen, understood, and taught without a scientific and systematic knowledge of the symbol and the thing symbolized, between the predicates of which there is a correspondence. The rite assumes that the science of correspondence is a key by which we can at any time unlock the secret and hidden forces of nature. The invisible things of creation may be understood by the things that are made. And because it applies to every department of nature, it is not aptly designated the science of sciences. This is the cornerstone of every system of Freemasonry. Exclude it, and you destroy symbolic teaching. The symbolism of Freemasonry has never yet been studied as a science, and certainly it has never been taught as a science. The idea of dealing with symbolism as a science had no existence in the minds of those who revised the monitorial lectures and work in 1717. Let me just go through that last part again. The idea of dealing with symbolism as a science had no existence in the minds of those who revised the monitorial lectures and work in 1717. The rite to which Beswick refers is the Swedenborgian Rite, using the same structures and principles as regular masonry, but including additional degrees. The latter part is a statement of opinion based on an unproved and unprovable assumption that speculative masonry in a number of different orders and additional degrees existed very widely in Europe in the 17th century. But the promulgation of these beliefs among those who had influence in English lodges of the time must have had an effect. So the next time we get together, we want to talk a little bit about the work from volume 25 of Ars Quattro Coronatorum, notes on some Masonic personalities at the end of the 18th century. And it's in a volume on a paper by E.H. Dring. So we'll get into that. It's a fascinating piece. In the meantime, sit back with a little, you know, Oscar Peterson. He's a Canadian fellow. This is a performance in 1964 in Denmark. He has Ray Brown on bass. Crazy, crazy audience, eh? Thank you. Oscar Peterson, eh? Oscar Peterson. Excellent. So in the audience, Danish audience in 1964, did you hear the cadence clapping going on? You will no doubt remember hearing similar kinds of groups clapping in cadence somewhere in your Masonic existence. It was perhaps a symbol of people coming together. It was used in Rome in the Colosseum. So there was a particular clap for particular events, and it would be communicated, published, and at the instruction of the emperors or the generals. Here we have a particular way of greeting some people that we want to acknowledge. And there you have it. It sounds a bit odd when I'm used to the usual confused kind of clapping that we hear, but I'm a product of those big, out of self experiences of music and the arts, that where you actually are in this audience of people sharing an emotional experience. It's a revelation in a way, and it's not new. It's not new. So much about masonry and the ideas that were worked and developed around occurred because they were cutting edge, because nobody had done it before. Why have we not had this another period of symphonies being composed that are worth listening to? Why did we have, this series Haydn to Beethoven and Mozart and Bach to Haydn? How did that all occur? It was new. It had not been done before. The Baroque music that I listen to when I need to focus my thinking came about. It was at first very discordant, but it was new. It was an innovation. Okay, so get on Google and look at the paintings of Monet and the way that his work was described, the innovation that described his work went on to identify an entire type of art, the impression of color, the impression of motion. So we have these events that went on because they were new. Nobody was doing it. So that appealed to the courageous, inventive, brightest minds of the time. Now, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not going to repeat. The brightest minds aren't looking to repeat something. We know that science needs to have the theories repeated to validate and deepen the validation of those theories. A one-off may be a discovery, but you need to be able to replicate that study. That's what validates the darn thing. Masonry comes along as a student observer on these events, with a professor asking us the question, because we can't force this knowledge into our little brains. We have to be receptive to it. Then we open up those little brain receptors by allowing ourselves to accept and embrace the challenge. Why is this happening, and what is the value? What is the value of these events that have happened in the past? Well, we know that even in this, what are we looking at today, the 69th day of the year, we're a couple of days before the vernal equinox. Whoopee, everything's in balance temporarily for the likes of me. we have spring coming in my part of the earth and fall coming in your part of the earth. And it all continues to go on. But there is a connection. Nobody today, we're left with this sense of being responsible for our own understanding. We could have accepted the superstitions, and some do. You know, we've got the Flat Earth Society meeting in Canada this year in Edmonton. And some, I'm sure, are in earnest. You know, there's different strokes for different folks. But in the meantime, life goes on. Life goes on. We're going to talk next time about some of the work, the research that Wilmshurst was doing, and his struggle to try and define what we're looking at in Masonic effects, how and why. And we can trace back, we can re-engineer if we pay careful attention to what Wilmshurst was doing. He was quite an interesting mind. In the meantime, I want to thank you all for tuning in today. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us, and I look forward to being with you again in just a few days. Whether you're a football fan and you're watching what's going on with the Champions League, or you're a baseball fan and you're waiting for, you're watching the spring training, goes on, and it's good. You commit those acts of random Masonic kindness, and it wouldn't kill you to be a bit more generous and thoughtful with yourself. Oh my, use a little bit of that Masonic, the common sense that you've been storing up, Lord knows. Check this out. This is Soulissiere de Paris. I think you'll like it. Cheers. Le ciel de Paris montre d'elle à moi. Leur bonheur se construit sur un air, c'est pour eux. Sous le pont de Bercy, un fil d'or passé. Deux musiciens, quelques badauds, puis des gens. Depuis un siècle, il est décidé d'un film.